You had an interview with Ismail Baghaei, the foreign ministry spokesman, who is often the face of the Iranian regime itself. And what did he say that surprised you?
His position was this, that they want to negotiate. Like, their position is always to negotiate. They want peace. The number one thing is peace. But then he said, we're always willing to defend ourselves. And he always talked about how even their military actions are from a defensive perspective as opposed to an offensive perspective. And so he said, look, we always want to deal. We always want to negotiate, but we're willing to defend ourselves from a military perspective. But that being said, in terms of from the military perspective, we have put a large number of things in place in order to defend ourselves. And so we talked about some of those issues, and not just with him. I talked about other key members of Iran, not just the foreign ministry, but other aspects, which I don't want to say because I don't want to get in trouble. But I talked to a number of people, and I kind of have an overarching idea about what the plan is. And I think the plan is this. They're not going to strike, as an example, Israel first, but they are expecting Israel to strike at some point. And I think what's happened is because Israel's become aware of Iran's strategy, now you've seen, for example, a lot of statements coming out today. There was a statement from Smotrich saying that they don't want to join the war. They like it as it is now. And the reason for that is because if you remember, I came to your show, I believe it was on your show, when I said Iran's in 7 to 10 days, they're going to plan something big. Something big
yes.
is coming.
Yes, and I remember that.
Yeah. So it was on your show. And so now we're about 3 to 5 days away from that. And they are planning something huge, which is going to be quite devastating. They're going to be using a lot more missiles that they've never used before. And the mode and method that they're going to use has never been used before. And what I mean by that is, if you look up to the lead up to these 7 to 10 days, what's happened is Iran has systematically taken out, essentially, if you look at it, Israel's defense. There's other aspects to it as well we'll talk about. Oh, yeah, brilliant. You've got it on there. So they've taken out Israel's defense. And so if you look at, for example, Jordan was basically the early radar systems in Jordan, in Bahrain, in Kuwait, the air defense systems, the aviation facilities and hangars, the logistical hubs, the fuel and ammunition storage, CENTCOM infrastructure. All of these things, the way Iran viewed it was, there was two methods for it. One, and actually three, the other one is the ground invasion part, which we'll talk about later. But there's two methods with it. One is the military bases within those regions, but the other one is the defense of Israel. And so if you remember, in the first element of the war, the Ramadan war, they took out the Al Udeid airbase, the radar system in there, which was it was worth $1 billion. And that radar system was warning Israel. It was giving it like a 15-minute warning. And once that radar system was taken out, the warning time was reduced significantly. And now what they've done is, with this mechanism, taking out Muwafiq Salty airbase, striking it significantly, as well as Bahrain and Kuwait, you basically have it where there's less warning for these missiles. Then you've got the issue with the defense interceptors. And then if Jordan's not able to defend them, you're basically going to have open season on Israel. And so Israel's kind of seen these moves being made, and obviously they're not stupid. They realize that this is a tactical mode that has been implemented by Iran, which has been escalatory over this time, and they're expecting something huge within 3 to 5 days. The thing with Iran is, which obviously some of us may not agree with this, but the thing is, we don't want to strike Israel until they strike us. And so Israel's in this quagmire where they want to be part of the war because, you know, Trump is kind of struggling to get too deep into the war in terms of, if you look at the attacks that are occurring. But at the same time, they're so afraid of the consequences that you're basically in this quagmire. So Israel's kind of in this situation. Will they respond or not? But if they do, there's going to be a significant response against them and that response will be ready in 3 to 5 days.
Dan, you got to bring yourself back in.
I'm so sorry about that. Do you have any sense for, what that's going to be? What is going to be the target? I mean, we just had this up here a second ago talking about the things that they have been hitting here of late. But what is that to set up? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, so that's that element. And then there's a second important element. People in Iran, and I've talked to a number of people, and, you know, we may disagree with this, but I don't. I think they obviously know better. They've got the intel. They believe that there's highly likely going to be an attempt at a, I know this is going to annoy you, Daniel, but there is going to be a chance of a ground incursion. And so into one of the islands in close to them, likely Karg Island. And so obviously they have traps within Karg Island if that decision was made. But more than that, they said to me that they're seeing accumulation of forces in Kuwait. This is why they're striking Kuwait. Also, in terms of the Kurds, they do believe that the Kurds are still going to try and go in. They don't believe the story that, you know, oh, we got the weapons and we stole the weapons of the, you know, when Trump said, oh, we gave the weapons to the Kurds and they kind of took them. They don't believe that story. They believe that those weapons, that's just, you know, subterfuge. And in reality, they are going to attempt to go in. And so this is why you've seen the consistent attacks on Erbil, on Sulaymaniyah, in order to weaken any opportunity for Kurdish forces to try and go in. So there is this notion of belief that that's happening. So this is why they're striking Kuwait so significantly. This is why you're seeing almost consistent, persistent attacks on Kurdish areas in Iraq. And then separate to that, they are weakening American forces. First of all, removing them far away from Iran as possible. The reason, again, is because they're aware, they're fully aware of the crisis that the U.S. has in terms of oil, petroleum, and fuel. And so they want to try and move them across. They literally have, there's someone in Ghalibaf's department whose sole job is to basically keep track live the oil reserves in the United States of America. And so you basically have it where they're trying to push the U.S. out more because, again, you're further you are, the more fuel you're going to use. And so there's kind of like a multi-pronged attack that's going on, which, and then you can see the fruits of that by the attacks that are occurring.
And what is the objective of these, ramping this up? Would it be to cause the United States to come back to the table? Because there's one thing, actually, before we get too far away from your conversation with Ismail Baghaei, is I think it was yesterday I saw, if I'm not mistaken, Abbas Araghchi, who said he still felt that there was like a 10% chance that there could be a negotiated settlement, which really surprised me because I'm thinking with what we did in 2025, what we did to start of this war, what we did with the MOU came out. I mean, we never keep our word on anything. I don't know why they would want to abide by anything. I mean, it's not just the Strait of Hormuz, but it's also the frozen assets. It's sanctions on the energy, the $300 billion. I mean, they're not talking about any of this stuff. Iran literally got nothing out of this except for a temporary opening of the Strait of Hormuz where they got some of their oil out. But so why would they trust us for anything at all and even contemplate this alleged 10-day ceasefire that some are talking about? Or do you think that's actually realistic at all?
Yeah, I mean, look, they said to me they don't trust the United States of America. They do not believe that they basically will commit to any deal that they make. That being said, they said that, look, we need to be pragmatic. You can't have a scenario where you're not willing to negotiate with the enemy because that just means you're going to have perpetual war. So there's going to be a scenario throughout this entire period of time where there will be negotiations. Now, as you said, there is this kind of thought, and that's why he said 10%, that it's highly unlikely those deals will ever come about because the U.S. is incapable of fulfilling any deal. But that being said, the psychology is that they want the deal. Their psychology is that they've got responsibility for the Iranian people and they don't want Iran to be under perpetual war. So there is this, no doubt, Abbas Araghchi, what he's saying is the feeling within the foreign ministry. He is the head of the foreign ministry and the government, which is that they are willing to make a deal. It's just that they don't believe the U.S. will. And the way they see it is this, because I discussed it with them. I said, look, I do think that, you know, if you look at the entirety of the war, okay, there's one thing. But if you look at each part, and they agreed with me on this when we were having this conversation, that if you look at each part of the war as a separate stage, then from Iran's perspective, they believe that they've won each element of the stage. And you got to look at each stage as its unique element. And so what I mean by that is if you look at the first stage, the first 39 days, they told me that Trump basically within week two was asking for a deal, was asking for a ceasefire, and they continued it going. And even till the end, there was disagreement between Ghalibaf and Pezeshkian. Pezeshkian wanted the deal, as in he said, look, let's just make the deal. And Ghalibaf wanted to delay it by another week. And they came to like something in the middle, hence why the deal happened when it happened. But when they look at the first 39 days, they say, look, we won the kinetic power, we weakened the United States of America, we weakened their bases and the defense interceptors. Then you look at the next element. The next element was where it was essentially Iranian vessels coming out and not much American vessels coming out. So they've seen themselves as, again, winning that element of the economic aspect. Then you had the blockade. Now, the blockade was more of a wash, as in they feel like they shaded it a bit. They got some vessels out, but it wasn't as successful as the other parts, but it wasn't as successful as the United States of America. So they see that as a slight victory, maybe like a wash. And then the MOU, the way they see it is the US obviously did not fulfill anything in the deal except one thing, which was they allowed the oil to be unsanctioned, which meant Iran was able to sell about 70 million barrels. They made something between $7 to $10 billion, and the US never got anything. So in that element, they see it as like a victory, as in they managed to get that income in. Some of that money is going to be used for the military. Some of the money is going to be used for the people, and that's just going to help them as the war continues. And now they see it as this current part of the kinetic war, you're seeing where Trump, the way they see Trump's attacks is, he just continued to attack the South. He continued, and this is their position, which is he continues to attack the South. He continues to attack the same regions continuously. Sometimes he's attacking the same spots over and over and over again. Whereas what you're seeing with Iran is a systemized approach where they're taking out the bases, they're weakening the bases, they're removing the radar systems, they're removing the ability to defend those areas as well as the areas as well as Israel. And so the way they're seeing it is, once again, they're succeeding in this element. And this is what I've been told. I've been told that once again, Trump is actually desperate for a deal. And the 10 days you're referring to is actually Trump has been on the call with Field Marshal Assam Mania almost every day, but very consistently. When I say Trump, I mean the Trump administration, begging to get back to negotiations. Iran's stance is, and this is what I've been told, and again, it doesn't mean that this will be the final conclusion, but their stance is that the MOU now is suspended. If you want to go back to the table, there's going to have to be more concessions made, because once again, you attacked our country and broke the MOU and went against Article 5 and Article 1, but specifically Article 5 in this occasion. And so you can't be trusted. They told me, actually, this is what Ismail Baghai told me. He said, look, we were fulfilling the MOU. The MOU said to Article 5, the arrangements need to be done by Iran. And he told me this before. I can't remember if he said it in the interview, but he said the arrangements need to be done by Iran. We had 30 days. In those 30 days, I said, we need to negotiate with Oman. We need to negotiate with the other Gulf states. He said, we were doing that. We were negotiating with everybody. We were bringing everybody on board for the as part of the conversation. We were developing the conversation. And we were speaking about to Oman, as per the MOU, that after the 30 days, there would be a joint administration of the Strait of Hormuz. But then the Americans end up trying to create this new corridor. And this new corridor, what they're seeing it as, is a affront on the Article 5, but also they believed that there is some kind of, you know, from a military perspective, from a security perspective, there was a major issue as well in terms of the Americans having access to that as well. So this is the reason why they had to
stop. Yeah, and that came on the I remember, because I've shown that headline here a couple of days ago. That came on the 24th of June, 7 days after the signing of the MOU. So we had immediately tried to set up this southern corridor on Oman, so we can imagine. And let me ask if you have any insider knowledge about what was going on in Oman that got them, because they were working kind of with Iran, and that's why it was in the MOU in paragraph 5. But now all of a sudden, apparently, the United States put a lot of pressure on Oman to get them to agree to open this corridor. Do you have any insight into that?
It's exactly what you said. This is what I was told. I was told that with Oman, Iran doesn't have any problems with Oman. They were negotiating with Oman, but Oman, not being a very strong nation, has been bullied by the United States of America. And because they've been bullied by the United States of America, they've basically put themselves in a situation where they are not abiding by the MOU, and they are not basically standing up to the United States of America. And they're just like a weak nation in the sense of they're being bullied into the current situation.
And but I mean, if the United States, and this would seem to even still undercut the diplomatic path and the diplomatic folks in the Iran who wants to get back to that. Because if we, with 7 days in, went and gummed up the works here on what was our own interest, it was our interest to get that thing open as soon as possible to get the flow of oil going back into the global market for everybody's price to come down. And yet we interjected in there almost as though, and I don't know if you've heard anything on this or not, but I a number of things make me look around and think, it almost looks like we wanted this thing to fail because we wanted to go back to conflict by introducing that on the 7 day, not even within the, not even the 30 days, just 7 days in. And of course, then that started all this tit for tat, especially from the 7th of July forward, where we're now, it's 11 straight days of attacks. Is there any concern on the Iranian side that really, why even bother with this? Because if that didn't work after 7 days, why would something on the 10 days work later on? And that actually leads into the second question that I have for you regarding that. What do you understand about the battle inside of Iran, those who do want this negotiation and those who are saying, I told you we shouldn't have had a negotiation first, but I don't know if it's Ghalibaf or the IRGC that's saying we're in the position of military superiority right now. We have the leverage with the Strait and now possibly with Bab al-Mandab. So we don't have to give in to anything. Let's just sit back and wait until the pain gets bad enough on America. Is that a consideration for some in Iran?
Yeah, two great questions. So the first one is the way they see what the Americans were attempting to do was the first thing what they believe the Americans were trying to do is not even break the MOU, which they were trying to do. They were trying to break the MOU. But separate to that, or in addition to that, there was this kind of testing to see how far they would go, or how far they could go. And so they were trying to take control of the Strait and to see if Iran would let them. And the issue they had is because Iran was so strong and resolute in the fact that they had to have control of the Strait of Hormuz, Trump was then basically pressured into acting. So that's what the way they see it, in addition to obviously the Americans breaking it and not being consistent with the deal. In terms of the second question that you asked, which is, so what was the second question again?
It was about, is there a group with this IRGC, whoever this is, don't have a deal now at all, just let the pressure build up until they give us what we want?
Yeah, look, in Iran, I don't see it the way, and I haven't been there and spoke to all the different parties, all the different political persuasions. It's not that there is this kind of disagreement. There is the, obviously, you have Ghalibaf, Araghchi, and Pezeshkian, who are essentially the negotiators. Now, the will of the people is totally different to what the government wants. This is obviously quite clear. The government, as I mentioned, are always willing to negotiate. The people do not want negotiations. When you go into Iran, when you went to the funeral, people were persistent and consistent that they wanted a response. They wanted revenge. They wanted justice. The red flags were everywhere. The red flags of revenge. There was more red flags than there were flags of the country of Iran. They want revenge, similar to not just the three funeral processions I went to, but even there is the Revolutionary Square, and you have tens of thousands of people in one of the days, hundreds of thousands of people with the red flags. They want that. And so if you remember the statement by Mujtaba Khamenei where he said, we want revenge, this wasn't Mujtaba Khamenei, the supreme leader. This was him just relaying what the people are saying. And such was the level of passion of the people that they do not want a deal with the United States of America. This has obviously pressured the negotiators because they're not able to make a deal or make any concessions when you have that type of scenario. Not that they wanted any concessions, but even talking to America was something that was considered off limits. In addition to that, when you go to Iran, what you find is that the Americans and the Israelis struck civilian areas intentionally. And it's quite clear that it was intentional because there's a number of those areas, and I did a report on this, they're not military bases. There's no military bases close by. Some of them are civilian apartments, civilian buildings. There was a Jewish synagogue, and it had Jewish apartments all around, which what I mean by that, it was Jewish people living in those apartments. And when I spoke to those people, they believed that strike was intentional by Israel because they were angry with them because they believed that they were Iranian, they were against Israel, they were against Zionism. And so they believe that they were punished. In addition to that, if you look at the other locations that were hit, people believe, for example, the fertility clinic. Once again, people believe that was intentional. The attack on the journalistic News 2 studio, they believe that was intentional. Azadi Square. So all of these, they believe that they were intentional and therefore, because there was no military bases close by. And so what you've got is a population who definitely doesn't want a deal. Now, in terms of the leadership, what the leadership is trying to do is they're trying to balance the will of the people with this notion that, you know, you need to negotiate with the enemy to try and come to some kind of resolution. You can't have a perpetual war. But that being said, when I'm explaining all of that, and I don't think there's a disagreement within the leadership, I think the position of the negotiators is something that is being relayed by the supreme leader Mujtaba Khamenei, and they are carrying out his orders. And if the MOU look at it, it was a surrender document. So why would they not sign it? That being said, the 10 days statement that has been made from Qatar, my understanding is that Iran isn't or won't sign that as per the current mechanism that by which it is. It is they are not willing to agree to a deal now, even that brings you back to the MOU, which that 10-day pause wasn't, because they want serious concessions. And so it would only be serious and major concessions in addition to what's already in the MOU, which would bring Iran back to the table. But no, I don't think there's any kind of disagreement between the different groups within Iran. There is normal political disagreement, of course. You do have the far right in Iran, and they are very, like, not happy that the negotiators are negotiating. And then you obviously have the negotiators, and then you have the government and the different branches within Iran. And obviously there's political, philosophical disagreement, but in terms of them working against each other, that's clearly not happening.